Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with Pete Whitworth. Pete is an industrial designer for Smart Shape Design, an industrial design firm in Cleveland, Ohio. We talk about working as a caricature artist while in high school, his time studying industrial design, the intersection of industrial design and user experience, and more, all right after this. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prints for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. Do you need stickers? Jack Prints can do it. Do you need t-shirts? Jack Prints can do it. Embroidered hats, business cards, banners. Jack Prints can do it. They make great stuff at a great price. Jack Prints makes great affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Right now, Jack Prints is giving you 25% off plus free shipping on orders over $49. When you use the promo code NEWYEAR2017A at checkout, visit Jack Prints for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. Special thanks to Teresa Tomlinson, Mayor of Columbus, Georgia, for becoming our newest patron over on our Patreon page. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Pete, thanks for joining me tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. I appreciate it.
So, where did you grow up? We'll just dive right into it.
Yeah, sure. I grew up not too far from Cleveland here, 20 minutes south in a town called Sagamore Hills, Ohio. It's nothing out of this world. It's just a small suburban town. And yeah, I grew up down there. It's right by the Tioga Valley National Park.
Okay.
So it's in walking distance, which was actually a big part of the childhood. So.
Sure. So when you were growing up, you had a national park in your background. Were you kind of an outdoorsy kid, or were you the stay inside, play on video games all day long, and never see sunlight kid?
A little bit of both. I was actually very outdoorsy. Well, my whole family was outdoorsy. Mm-hmm. We would always go on family vacations all over the U.S. every summer. And by family vacations, I mean we would go on camping trips. We would do backpacking outings, a lot of high adventure stuff like whitewater rafting or mountain biking or anything like that. So in turn, since my family, my dad and mom were big in the outdoors, I kind of naturally became big in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. Didn't appreciate it as much when I was younger, but now I definitely do. So I would stay inside a lot and play a lot of video games, and then the dad would come home and it's like, what are you doing? You got to get outside, man. It's like, yeah, but so it was a little bit of both.
So he'd throw you out the house after he got home and tell you to go outside and play instead of being a normal normal kid.
Exactly.
Who wants to stay on video games all the
time. I was thinking, I'm pretty sure I was like every other normal 90s kid with a PlayStation. So staying inside and, until dad gets home and I got to get outside and get some fresh air. So, but yeah, that brings me to now. And now I'm definitely a big outdoor enthusiast and do a lot of outdoorsy things. So.
Awesome. So, going through school and all, were you interested in arts at the time or?
Yes. So ever since I could remember, I was always quite the drawer. Now I'm not sure if it's like that for everybody, who's artistic, but I've been drawing ever since I could remember. Sure. So naturally, I've always wanted to become an artist of some sort. I've always wanted to go in the arts. Mm-hmm. So that was like, there was no alternative, basically. And I would go throughout high school, just middle-sized suburban high school, and take my art classes and then take my other classes. And the art classes as well as the other classes were both pretty balanced, so I had to make sure I had good grades and did well in the art classes. Mm-hmm. So I was able to use the good grades I gathered throughout high school to go to college. That's what my mom told me. So if I didn't have good grades, I couldn't go to college. So I definitely focused on both.
I wish I had taken my mom's advice on that. not that I didn't go to college, but I did not have good grades. So I wasn't necessarily getting my first pick of where I wanted to go.
Yeah. So it helps. I guess I wouldn't say it helped, but it helps to have a good college GPA or high school GPA.
Yeah.
I was smart in the academics and did well in the art classes, and I played sports as well. So not totally your average creative type, but I dabbled a little bit of everything, and
More well-rounded than some of us.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely well-rounded for sure. It comes with good and bad, I guess.
So where'd you end up going to college at?
So I went to the Cleveland Institute of Art.
Okay.
Which is, for those that are familiar, right on the east side of Cleveland, on Euclid there in the University Circle area. So after graduating college or high school, I was looking at a couple different areas for college, and I was looking at mm-hmm. CIA as well as Ohio Northern University, mm-hmm. Trinity, or not Trinity, Xavier University.
Okay.
And both Ohio Northern and Xavier had pretty decent illustration programs, which was kind of the one thing that I really wanted to become. Well, at least that's what I thought. I knew nothing of industrial design, and I really wanted to become an illustrator. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time throughout my youth and throughout high school, I've always wanted to be a concept artist for like video mm-hmm. games and movies. Because I was always a good drawer. Everybody in school would always come to me and be, Peter, can you draw me this picture? Can you draw me this? Can you draw this dude doing this and this and that? And I would get a lot of requests, and I was always kind of like the illustrator of my class. Sure. So that's kind of always something that I've wanted to become, was a concept artist for video games and movies, just because it's badass. You're creating a bunch of cool creatures and environments and worlds, and you're basically creating new things.
Sure. Yeah. It's every teenage boy's dream is to be a video game artist.
Yeah, that's
that or a video game tester, one of the two.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So I've always wanted to be that for the longest time. I was one of my first jobs was the first job was as a character artist at Geauga Lake. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I'm not, but I know what a character artist is, so I imagine it's a little, like, kind of amusement park sort of thing.
Definitely, yeah. I was 15, and that was my first job.
Nice.
And it was definitely a learning experience. It was a good experience for a summer. A good first job. It really taught me a lot, got me to open up a lot. I've always mm-hmm. I was always quiet in mm-hmm. school. I was a quiet kid, but when you're a character artist, you can't really be the quiet kid because you got to, you know, stand by your booth, sometimes with another, sometimes just by yourself, and kind of bring in customers. And then not only do you have to bring them in and sell them on getting a drawing done, but you also have to sit them down and, yeah, sketch their portrait in a cartoony way, you know. And sure. While you're doing that, you got to talk to them and tell them, hey, how's your day, you know, kind of be funny at the same time.
Yeah, find out a little bit about them so you can add to the areas to accentuate and stuff.
Exactly. So, yeah, and it taught me a lot to really open up, and then also take a lot of criticism too, because
a lot of people probably weren't thrilled.
Oh yeah, you're definitely going to take a lot of criticism as a character artist. And one of the main things that I was always like, I'm dumbfounded by, which what their comments were when I turned the easel around and showed them the picture, they were like, well, why do I look so funny? And I'm like thinking to myself, well, you're getting a character. It's supposed to be funny, right?
I mean, you see all the sample pictures here, right?
Exactly. Exactly. But I guess they didn't like the way they looked when certain features were exaggerated. So I don't know.
You made them already sensitive about their nose even more sensitive by accentuating it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I guess I would hurt their feelings. And got a lot of weird requests too. As you could imagine, there's a lot of characters at amusement parks in general.
Yes.
And we got a lot of few weird requests throughout that summer. And when you're a 15-year-old guy at his first job, it's just kind of startling sometimes. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I can imagine.
A lot of fun.
I can imagine. So when you're going through college, what are you taking? Do you start off, you obviously wanted to do, you know, the video game design and all, and probably stay away from characters after that summer in the amusement park. what do you start off studying there?
Like I said, I wanted to become an illustrator, so they have an illustration program.
Okay.
The CIA, the Cluny Sudvart, is a 4-year program, and it's kind of broken up as in the first year is the year where you take all of your, I guess they call it core classes. Sure. Foundations, it's your foundations year. So you're taking your drawing, your painting, your color theory classes, history classes along with that. And you're kind of building up your fine arts portfolio so that you're able to take that portfolio that you built up throughout that year. And then when you become a sophomore, you're able to get into your major, you choose your major. Mm-hmm. And, so I originally wanted to go into illustration. And when I went to CIA at the time, their ID department was in the same building, because there's two buildings. It was in the same building as the industrial design department.
Okay.
And it was in the basement, and it was kind of like one of those situations where if you ventured into the basement, you know, it's kind of like a very intimidating space because you had all these, they're almost kind of like, I like to say, like jocks of the school, you know. It's like, if you could imagine in your head, a jock of an art school, that's kind of how the industrial design students were. So they were very like, you know, big football player type guys sketching really cool cars and cool products and this and that. And, so venturing down there was, intimidating to say the least, but, when I did, I would venture down and take a look at the transportation design students, work. And they would put up their big 8-foot by 8-foot wall size plots with all of their current designs for Cadillac or GM Chevrolet, whoever the car company is that they're working with for that semester. So they would have all their designs up, and in a way, I guess it kind of reminded me of concept art, because they're drawing all these really cool, sweet, futuristic looking cars. And as you can imagine, all the sketch work, all the visual communications were very appealing to me as a guy wanting to go into illustration to create like all these really cool looking, you know, creatures or vehicles for video games or environments. It was really appealing to me. So upon seeing all that cool car sketches and stuff, I was like, oh, well, maybe I should check out ID, because I really like the culture. I also like the fact that you're could be designing something that would be made, not just virtual in a video game or a film or a book or something like that. So sure. I was really kind of it was really appealing to me.
Mm-hmm. So when you go in and you're studying that, you mentioned that there were kids studying the transportation design stuff within the industrial design department. Were there different kind of paths you could take within that?
Yes. And this is what I tell everybody, is that there are, I would say, there's two main paths. So if you can imagine two main paths, there's the transportation design path and then the product design path. Uh-huh. So the transportation design path kind of goes off, and then the product design goes off and branches off in its own separate thing. So the product design track can be broken up even further into just general product design, and then toy design, and the other one would probably be like, I would say, furniture design. You could go into like designing furniture for Herman Miller or Steelcase, or like an independent furniture company that designs, I don't know, mid-century furniture or something like that. Off of that product design path, there's kind of like three tracks off of that, I feel like. But yeah, there's definitely two solid paths, the transportation design path and then the product design at CIA at least. So.
Gotcha. So you get in there, do you kind of play around with both and then settle on one, or?
Yeah. So when I went in as a sophomore, again, going into ID as thinking, oh, you know, it's going to be really cool to get into transportation design. When you go in, you take your kind of core studio ID classes, which are your basic, like, let's see, one class might be called visual communications, where you learn how to render with markers and pens and render digitally, like on a program called Sketchbook Pro. We would use Cintiqs and stuff like that. The other class would be like your core ID class, which would be you would get one project two projects every semester. So your core ID class would have the first quarter would be like, I don't know, your brand family project. So you get like a project and then have to design three products and then kind of make them cohesive in a visual family. So you have to apply design elements across the entire family. So like classes like that. Then on Saturdays, you were able to take your car class, what is what they called it, if you were interested in it. So all the car guys would take their studio transportation design class every Saturday.
Okay.
And so we would take our regular ID classes throughout the week. Then Saturday we would take our transportation design class. And my first semester of sophomore year, I tried it out, and I liked it. but you know, I didn't like it enough to where I wanted to pursue something in the transportation design field. Just because.
So you didn't want to work Saturdays.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the entire reason. I just did not want to work Saturdays. it is a lot of work, though. It was very demanding. I feel like transportation design in general is a very competitive and very demanding. Not that, you know, product design that I'm in now isn't demanding, but it is a very competitive, demanding field, especially when you're competing with designers from Asia or on the West Coast, designers in Detroit from the School of College of Creative Studies, CCS in Detroit. So there's a lot of competition because there's only, you know, X number of car companies out there.
Yeah, I was about to say that you got a lot more competition when you've got a lot fewer options for jobs.
Exactly. And the competition is very fierce. So I would say what sets everybody apart is their level of sketching ability. So if you're a really good sketch artist, that will set you, you know, a lot higher than, you know, somebody who isn't, I guess, so-so at sketching. But, you know, also you have to have your design sensibilities as well. But being a hot sketch artist, we would call it, would set you apart from everybody else.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So not only that kind of turned me off, but the culture was not something that I wanted to go into. And I guess the core reason is because I wasn't really a car guy at heart to begin with. I never really grew up in dabbling with cars and going under the hood and, you know, dreaming of one day getting my Ferrari or, and, you know, something like that. I was always more so into video games or, did a lot of like biking. So I'm more of a cycling kind of guy than a car guy. So you know, I wasn't really passionate about it. So on the second semester of my sophomore year, I decided not to pursue that. And basically that's just sort of dropping the class and just focusing on, product design. Because as a car guy, you still have to take your transportation design classes as well as your product ID classes.
Sure.
So I just focus primarily on product design.
Gotcha. Yep. So when you're going through school, you know, you mentioned the 3D stuff that you learned. What are you learning in? Are you learning in something like AutoCAD Inventor or are you learning in like Maya Works?
So yeah, the 3D programs that we used, well, when I was going to school, we were taught Alias,
okay,
which is more so a surfacing program. So from what I remember, it is that you're like something compared to SolidWorks, you're kind of more so in Alias sketching with curves in space. Whereas in SolidWorks, you're able to it's not really friendly for sketching in space. You're sketching on planes. So there's like the front plane, the right plane, the top plane, and you have to sketch on these planes and create planes to create sketch lines. And then from those sketch lines, you can create solid objects or surfaces. And it's, I feel like a lot more, I guess it's a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like Alias is more so, you know, you're creating something in 3D, but SolidWorks, you're able to get more exact dimensions and tolerances and things like that, whereas Alias is a little bit more free-forming.
So one's more intuitive, one's more precise?
Yeah, well, I would say SolidWorks is more intuitive and precise. well, at the time, SolidWorks is a very, I feel like, easier program to learn. But when I was going to school, we learned Alias. And at that time, I feel like as a product designer, you we really needed to learn more so SolidWorks, because that's what everybody was using. All the consultancies and companies would use SolidWorks instead of Alias. So
you got the real world versus the academic world, and
exactly,
they weren't meeting up.
They weren't meeting up. If you were to go into transportation design, they use Alias, as far as I know currently. But if you were to do product design, yeah, everybody uses SolidWorks. So it's the last year, and my class kind of pushed for the upcoming students to be learning SolidWorks instead of Alias if they were going to go into product design. So, but yeah, we use primarily SolidWorks.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you get out of school? Do you know, where do you start off at?
So when I got out of school, it was in 2012, and I remember getting right out of school, and at the time I was working with myself and two other classmates. We started we launched a product on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And at the time we were kind of dealing with that, because we launched it our second semester of our senior year.
Sure.
And we were, you know, dealing with everything that comes with having a Kickstarter project. So, you know, making sure we work out the engineering to get it manufactured, because we did get our project fully funded, and you know, getting time set up and connections set up to be able to manufacture the product, and customer relations with everybody on Kickstarter asking, well, what's the status of the product, stuff like that. So we were pretty busy with that. But I remember the three of us were still in town the summer after we graduated. And I remember mm-hmm. getting a call from Mike Machuzak, who's the president of SmartShape. And he brought myself and my two other classmates that I was working with on our Kickstarter projects to SmartShape to help with a big client project that they had going on. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of initially brought in as contractors first. It's kind of like a godsend, because it was probably the easiest transition ever. a lot of people who graduate and get out of college, they have a lot harder time than I did. So it was pretty fluid. It's a pretty fluid transition from coming right out of school and then getting into a job. So we started out as contractors, and I was eventually hired on full time at SmartShape
Design. Awesome.
Yeah.
So at SmartShape, you're an industrial designer. Without getting into specifics, because I know you can't necessarily talk about all your clients and projects you're working on, but what type of overall projects do you get to work on?
Everything, man. it's like there's really, and I'm running through my projects in my head that we're working on right now. It can be anything under the sun, really. Primarily we focus on medical, since we're in Cleveland, so it makes sense to have a focus in medical product design.
Sure.
We do consumer, and consumer being anything from like juvenile products to consumer electronics to cleaning products and houseware stuff, and you know, the list goes on and on. And then there's also the kind of commercial industrial side, so like HVAC tools and things of that nature. Car mm-hmm. chargers, we've done the charger for the new Cadillac, electric Cadillac, and we've done work.
I didn't even know there was a new electric Cadillac coming out.
Yeah, I forget what it was called. Well, it was a couple of years ago. It's called EL something. And yeah, that was a few years ago. Okay. But we worked on electric vehicle charging stations and stuff for Safety First. They make juvenile products, so we've done like thermometers and baby monitors. We also do like packaging design as well. So we'll design what, you know, the bottle looks like. But also if we design the physical product, there's, especially in consumer products, there's always the packaging component that goes along with it. So we would design the unboxing experience and what the graphics look like on the packaging and, stuff like that. So that brings me to say there's of Smart Shape, there's the physical design, but there's also, the digital design as well. So, we're doing a lot more, user experience design and user interface design. And that is something, exciting and new and, very, I guess, similar in a way, UX design compared to ID, just because the thought processes are very similar. You're just working in a different, different platform, I guess.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think a lot of the basis, and I mentioned this when I was talking with Brian last week. I think, you know, from my limited knowledge, because I honestly don't know a ton about industrial design. I know the, you know, the basic core of it, but I know that, you know, Dieter Rams was a big industrial designer, and a lot of the UX UI design stuff is based off his principles. So I imagine there's a lot of overlap in the stuff that he kind of was pushing forward. And then with other industrial design, and I literally had a list of industrial designers and now I've blanked on all of them except
That's the only one you have to know.
Truthfully. Yeah, he's the important one. He's the one everybody talks about. Right. He still write articles about.
Yeah, exactly. He's, his legacy will be around for ages and ages. But
yeah.
And you know what, you say that and it's kind of funny because I definitely agree. A lot of the design principles that Dieter Rams, the industrial designer, is kind of established, but I don't know. I like to think of it. He didn't really. It's not like Moses comes down from the mountain and, you know, creates these Ten Commandments. It's more so like principles that were already kind of already subconsciously been embedded in designers' minds. He just kind of brings those to light. So being a designer, an industrial designer, it kind of wows me when I. And starting to get more into the UX and UI design that a lot of UX designers aren't originally industrial designers. A lot of them come from psychology backgrounds or communication arts, so like graphic designer backgrounds, which makes sense. But I've not met a lot of industrial designers who are practicing UX designers now. It's a new hot profession. So hopefully with time I'll meet more UX or ID guys and gals who are UX designers as well.
Do you think that's easy for you to switch between the environments?
In terms of UX design, so UX being user experience design, it definitely is, because what a lot of people don't realize is that UX design is both physical and digital. So there's in the physical world, there's the user experience with the physical product, which is a huge component in ID. You know, it's not only the what the product looks like, but it also is the experience the user has with the product. We have to make whatever they're using intuitive and enjoyable. Hopefully the product that we create has a positive emotion rather than a negative one, because nobody's going to like it or buy it.
You don't hear a lot about people intentionally designing something that's going to piss people off. When they use it,
so. Exactly. But I'm sure there are products out there. I remember seeing like a Japanese,
I'm sure there are.
Japanese toy where you place a quarter on, or you place a quarter inside a box and it like spits it out back at you, and you place it back in the box, spits it out again. So it's an endless cycle of irritation. But our primary goal is to create a positive experience with whatever product the user is using. And with that being said, I feel like it's literally the exact same thing in you know, a digital platform, you're creating a enjoyable, intuitive experience for the user that is using a an app or a website or a program. It's just a different, it's just a different platform. It's just there's a tangible product, and then there's the intangible virtual product that they're sure. using.
Sure. So, excuse me, as I choke on my ear there. So, you know, that you're allowed to talk about, what's been the most exciting project that you've gotten to touch in your time at SmartShape?
Let's see. So I think the most exciting project that I worked on, which I am allowed to talk about, is probably the product. It's called TempTrack. And what TempTrack is it's a small adhesive patch that a child can wear underneath their arm. And inside the patch, there's a sensor, and there's a really thin, flexible battery, and that's how they're able to achieve it being in such a thin and flexible package. So what the patch does is that it reads the child's temperature throughout a period of 24 hours, and it sends all that information to an app on a phone. And the app on the phone, the TempTrack app, is able to show you graphically the temperature fluctuations throughout that 24-hour period. And it's also just, it's able to show what that current temperature is. So you're getting basically a live reading. And the game changer with that is that you're not only viewing the temperature, but you're also able to set an alert temperature. So if your kid has a fever, and he or she is sleeping, and you're about to go to bed for the night, and you got to wake up for work the next day, you don't have to wake up throughout the night and check their temperature periodically, but you're also able to let them sleep, so you don't have to wake them up throughout the night to check their temperature.
I was about to say, if you're a parent, there's that inherent, you're going to be waking up no matter what.
Probably, now that you mentioned that.
Speaking as a parent, even when I know my kids aren't doing that bad and I'm not worried about their temperature spiking, I will wake up to check on them.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that no matter what.
I see it definitely being useful for not waking your kids up and, you know,
yeah, it's basically to get some rest. It's letting them sleep. All right, let me put it in a situation where your kid's sleeping and you're sitting watching some Netflix.
Sure, but there we go.
Yeah, so it's letting them sleep throughout the night, and you're not having to wake them up every time to take their temperatures. They're able to set an alert temperature, so say like 103 degrees, and when they breach the temperature, you get an alert notification on your phone.
Sure, so it wakes you up. You can go check on them, give them some more ibuprofen and Advil, and
exactly. And so that brings me to say that you're able to take or make notes throughout the time. So if you give your kid ibuprofen or whatnot, you're able to make a note of that, and then kind of send at the end of the 24-hour period, because that's when the patch dies. You're able to send that information to possibly the doctor or anything like that, if they want that information. You're able to send it in like a table format.
So what was your role within the project? Were you doing the UX design for the for the physical product or for the app portion of it?
Yeah, so at the time I was working with a senior designer, and why I mentioned that product is because not only is there the physical component, the patch, but there's also the digital component as well. What we did was design the shape of the patch, and then the graphics that were printed on top of it. And we also did the UX and UI of the app. And what that entailed was designing around user flows, designing initial wireframes for the app, and making the app intuitive for a young mom or new mom mm-hmm. who was the target user, making it intuitive for her to use. And when we design the product as well as the digital component that goes along with it, it made sense, and it was easy enough to design the branding that went along with that. So what we did, we came up with the name and what the logo looked like, the typography that went with the brand and the brand colors and the iconography and everything underneath that umbrella. So we touched on basically everything that comes with a product. And a lot of products nowadays, there's always a physical product that is, has mm-hmm. some type of digital component that goes along with it. A lot of it is seen in the Internet of Things. And that was kind of like the first Internet of Things product that I've worked on. And that was enjoyable because we touched on every single component. And, you know, there's other components that are, you know, there's the packaging that we did for that, and the graphics for the packaging I touched on and still working on to this day. So it was a fun project. It was a big project, a fun project. And yeah, that's probably one of the most enjoyable ones.
Awesome. What do you think has been the most challenging project you've had to work on?
Oh, let's see. The most challenging one. Well, can't really talk about the ones that I'm working on right now, but
that you're allowed to talk about.
So there's not like really one challenging project.
Is it generally a component of a project that is challenging more than the overall?
Yeah. So I think that, like, for example, like we would work with a client and we did a design for of an MRI, and mm-hmm. you know, getting into that, you're kind of coming into it and not really having an idea or any idea, for me at the time at least, because this was probably my second year of working at SmartShape. You don't really have a good idea of the medical device world, and you're not really familiar with MRIs. You've never been in an MRI, so having to design something that that you're not really familiar with, I guess it's challenging because, you know, there's a big learning curve with that. And that's not just with that MRI project, but it's with a lot of projects that come in. Since we are a small design consultancy, myself and two other designers, as well as the design director, you know, we have to really stay on our toes, and having projects come in from really every angle, and a lot of it could be something that you've never really are well versed in, really mm-hmm. is challenging to the fact that you have to bring yourself up to speed and really get yourself acquainted with that in that world. Again, it could be a medical device, it could be, you know, trying to decipher what doctors are saying when they're trying to explain this procedure and you're like, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Please slow down. Or, you know, some weird technology that somebody comes to you and has an idea for that you've never heard of, and you really don't understand the chemistry behind it or anything like that. So, there really isn't one specific challenging project. It's really the challenging part is that there's a lot of different things that come at you with working in the design consultancy that you really have to get acquainted with and become aware of, and really understand what you're designing for before you design it.
Awesome. So we're getting kind of close to our time, and I want to be aware of that.
Okay.
So where can people find you online?
incognito, man. I'm under the radar. Nobody can find me anywhere. No, I wish that was the case. No, it's I actually don't have a personal website right now up or anything like that, but you can find me online at on Smart Shape's website, smartshape.design. And yeah, you could click on my bio there and read a little bit more about me. And yeah, and follow me on Instagram, because I think I post some pretty nice pictures. You can find me on Instagram at P Whitworth.
Perfect. Well, Pete, I appreciate you taking the time tonight to talk with me. This has been a lot of fun, kind of learning more about the industrial design stuff.
Yeah, it was good, man. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on the show.
Perfect. So we end each podcast by saying, go out and hug some necks, which is just kind of a way of saying, go out, meet new people, don't be a stranger, and which is kind of what the podcast is about. Would you mind taking us out by saying that?
Yeah, so go out and hug some necks.
Perfect. Thanks, Pete.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jason. Appreciate it.
You can find out more about Pete at smartshape.design, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with them. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at CreativeSOPod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA, over at CreativeSouth.com, and I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit Jack Prince and get 25% off, plus free shipping on orders of $49 or more when you use promo code NEWYEAR2017A at checkout. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.